Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today, I have Luca Tai, executive director and co-founder of Squish. You might be wondering, what is Squish? It stands for the St. Louis Queer Support Helpline. Welcome, Luca.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. So we have met virtually, but your name is one of these that just keeps coming up, and we are interconnected in a few different ways. Squish is a member of our community advisory board at PreventEd. You're a registered coalition. How long has Squish been in existence?
So we were founded in 2019 because we did a community needs assessment and wanted to address the violence, harassment, discrimination faced by the St. Louis LGBTQI community. So we were founded in March 2019. We launched our peer support helpline on September 20th, 2019. We like to think about it as our birthday, so celebrate it every year.
Love it.
Now we're in our third year, actually reaching our third birthday next week.
Happy birthday. Happy soon-to-be birthday.
Yeah.
Did I make it up, or are you, or were you at one point connected with WashU?
So I was a WashU undergrad student,
and some
of the seed founding for Squish came from the Gephardt Institute, who awarded a $5,000 grant for us to start. So Squish started as a summer project for me, and at the time I really wanted Squish to become a sustainable organization, and it really took many years to get to where we are today with 2.0 full-time equivalent staff funding, but we started totally volunteer-run.
So you started, I think that's, we need to like back up and really highlight that. So you started completely student-run, and now you have two FTEs who are doing this for your full-time job.
Yeah.
So LGBTQ is a acronym, I guess, for lack of a better word, that you stated a couple of times, or we've mentioned it. For those people who maybe don't totally know what that stands for, can you talk about that? Because I know the purpose of Squish is really to promote and preserve LGBTQ mental health.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, asexual, aromantic folks also include folks who are questioning on any spectrums of gender and sexuality. We also use the word queer as an umbrella term. It used to be a slur and is historically a term filled with a lot of pain and hatred. But in the past couple of years, movements for queer liberation have really tried to reclaim the term queer, which is why now it's in our name.
But just to be clear, as somebody who does not identify as a queer individual, it would not be appropriate for me to use that word, correct?
Great question. So what we like to do at Squish is follow a personal caller-led approach. So what I would do is I would ask, you know, are you comfortable using the word queer? What label do you use for yourself? And then take that person's lead. Typically, though, the word queer has been a pretty, because it has so much historical baggage, we do ask allies to practice caution and care and to ask before using words like that.
And an ally would be, just for people who might not totally know.
Yeah, allies are folks who see themselves as providing significant and meaningful support and uplifting the LGBTQI community. So you might say, I'm an LGBTQ ally, maybe having an allyship sticker and practice that day to day. Another related word is accomplice. So we think about accomplices as people who are willing to put their own needs and self-interest on the line for part of any movement work related to queer liberation. And that's also used in a variety of activism contexts with regards to supporting any marginalized community.
Wow. Okay. So the helpline. So what I heard you say is that you started this as a project, right? Where you were recognizing through a needs assessment that there were a lot of incidents of bias and hate. And I'm going to assume that then you recognize the need for a resource for people to reach out and gain support. Is that basically how it happened?
Absolutely. And I think one thing that was instrumental in founding the helpline is realizing there's a lack of peer counseling, peer support resources in St. Louis. So from what I've heard from community elders, the last gay or lesbian hotline existed in the 1980s.
Really?
And so that's a really long time ago. And even then it was, you know, centered around lesbian and gay folks. So like around sexuality-based oppression, but there was not as much an awareness and recognition of trans folks and gender-based oppression in that way. So we felt like Squish is filling a really much needed niche in terms of a LGBTQ specific peer counseling teleservice. And it's the only queer mental health resource in the St. Louis area that also takes an anti-carceral approach, which means that we don't call the police or 911 when somebody is in crisis. And instead try and rely on community-based interventions like BHR, community leaders, people's trusted people, community safety marshals when it comes to safety planning.
Wow. Okay. My brain is going in a million directions. So I know I didn't ask you, I specifically said, please don't give me data points. And now I'm going to ask a data question. I'm so sorry. You're about to celebrate your third birthday. How many calls do you field we could say, you know, whatever is the metric, is per month, per year? What does that look like? What's the volume?
Great question. So to be honest with you, when we first started, call volume was very low.
Yeah.
And we...
Because you were just getting the word out, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, we also operate in a community where trust is very precious. So there are many resources with promises of like safety or being able to care for the community that often go away or shut down or are not able to fulfill those promises. So gaining community trust is an ongoing challenge.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of answering your question about numbers, we get over 100 calls a year. But what's important to us is not necessarily the number of calls, but the, I think, amount of time we spent peer counseling. So a lot of crisis hotlines have 5 to 10 minute calls on average. Mm-hmm. And so we find that traditional nonprofit metrics around number of calls don't really measure the depth of the interaction.
Oh, sure. It's like quantity, not necessarily quality.
Exactly.
And linking them with resources and making sure that there's some sort of resolution or getting folks to safety.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So I would say that the average call is about 30 to 45 minutes, which is, you know, way long. It's close to the length of a counseling therapy session.
Yeah, for sure.
And we take about 150 calls a year, which provides about 100 hours of peer counseling.
Are you a therapist? Do you have therapists or counselors on staff?
We have licensed clinical social workers who serve as our clinical supervisors, and they help us review our helpline protocols. But to be really honest with you, we find that folks with credentials in this work, mental health credentials, even though are really valuable and part of the work, don't necessarily kind of predict how much they appreciate and understand the peer counseling approach. So I worked on a sexual assault hotline before and went through 100 hours of training to learn how to provide identity-affirming, survivor-centered emotional support using a peer counseling approach. And I find that...
Can you say that again?
Yeah.
Identity-affirming. Mm-hmm. Say that whole piece again.
Yeah. Identity-affirming, survivor-centered emotional support using a peer counseling approach. That's a whole lot of words because it is a really robust curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that peer counseling, peer support is often undervalued in mental health fields because of the often very clinical and medicalized approach we take to mental health. So we find that even though mental health professionals are allies, helpers, guides in this work, we often find that community members, once empowered with peer counseling skills, actually do a lot to support the people around them. And people who reach out for support really appreciate this non-hierarchical peer-based approach from a place of lived experience, being able to relate, and cultural humility.
And, you know, peer programs, I mean, these are nothing new, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have peer programs where we teach, you know, juniors and seniors how to talk to freshmen and sophomores about substances and things like that, or how to be peer helpers. And so the research is clear that peers are where it's at, right? And so there's been this movement with peer recovery supports in the substance use field and in the mental health field more broadly. So I'm just so intrigued by how you and the other staff protect your own mental health.
Yeah.
Because I used to work on a sexual assault helpline and that shit is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really, pardon my French, that is really hard. And how do you like put your own oxygen mask on while you're helping guide all these other folks to support and safety?
Absolutely. And I find that burnout and vicarious trauma, some of the biggest reasons people walk away from this work and cause there's attrition. So we actually, a project we started a year ago, half a year ago, that we're really excited about. It's called the St. Louis Queer Mental Health Coalition. And its goal is to recruit somatic healers and therapists to provide services to our staff and peer counselors so that we're building capacity internally and preventing burnout by working hand in hand with the kind of services that we're trying to provide. So it's kind of like requiring therapy for your therapist.
Right.
And we fund that and make it free, and insurance is not required. And in that way, we find that our peer counselors are maybe going to therapy for the first time, or they are thinking about their own mental health regularly as part of their volunteer commitment or part of their staff commitment.
So something that you and I have talked about, and I think you're doing it at other organizations, is really helping nonprofits who we are such a well-meaning bunch, but we don't always get it right, right? So helping nonprofits like us and others make sure that we are offering equitable services to members of the LGBTQIA plus community, that we are, that our materials are appropriate. Is that a service that you offer to other nonprofits as well?
Absolutely. So one of the programs we run is training and consultation for partner organizations. And what we really believe in is going beyond kind of really mainstream DEI efforts, which often kind of ask their DEI consultants or trainers to solve societal injustices. Like, now we have
Sorry, it's not funny, but it's funny, right?
Right. It's, you know, setting people up for failure, especially when marginalized people are recruited into those positions. Like, a racial equity committee of three people who are doing this outside of their full-time jobs, like, are not going to be able to solve, like, racial injustice on a society-wide level. And so what's really important to us is that we don't pretend to do that, and we don't make promises we can't keep. Instead, we try and provide kind of very specific, tailored consultation, and also connect our partners to other organizations we work with to fill specific needs.
But you're being paid for this, right? Because I think that's the other piece, is that many times people from marginalized communities are expected to give this like advice, tell us how to do it, tell us how hard it is for you. Oh, by the way, we're not going to compensate you for your time and your expertise and your experience.
Absolutely. So that's a really big issue as well, kind of people in our community being expected to provide emotional labor. So if you're thinking about like that one gay person at work that you ask about, or you ask like one trans person at work, like everything you, all the questions you have about gender or about trans people, that's the kind of emotional labor we're trying to remove from our community members and take it on ourselves for paid trainers who are equipped and passionate to do this work. And actually, our peer support helpline is also open to allies to call for like questions that,
That's cool. I did not realize that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're not asking your like one gay friend, like you actually can call a helpline and get support in that way.
Yeah, I think it's a more responsible way of seeking information. And I think also there's a relationship building piece that's important.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're talking to a live person as opposed to like reading an article that you might or not, might not process. Of course, the self-education and ongoing self-education is also important, but we find that when people are talking to LGBTQIA peer counselor and talking through like their struggles with supporting their daughter who just came out, for example, that that goes a long way in helping someone process their any emotional complications around that, so that their daughter in this case is isn't harmed.
So how are you funded? Because I'm like already my my gosh, I should really be calling because as you know, as an executive director, like I want to make sure that I'm supporting my staff, right? And I I could call up our DEI consultants, but that's not always the right space, right? And I certainly, you know, as I sort of joked about, I don't want to go to my one friend who just so happens to be gay and ask them because that's not fair to them. So, I mean, how are you funded?
Great question.
I mean, yes, some fee for service, right? So if you are providing consultation to a nonprofit, you do charge for that, but how else are you funded?
So So diversifying our funding streams is really important to us as most organizations hope for. So we started out being very reliant on individual donations, and that's kind of a lot of grassroots community-based organizations start with, like, this base of community support. And then we swung the other way and became very reliant on grants for a whole year. So that made it difficult, for example, it really increased the administrative capacity required. So, like, grant reporting, bookkeeping, regular. Yep.
So that's a full-time job in and of itself.
Matching the funding stream to the expense item, lots of kind of admin work. So right now, I think we're at a better middle ground where we're about 40% reliant on grants, 40% on individual donations, 20% on in-kind donations, monthly donations, and fee-for-service. So having that mixture, I think, really helps us to keep some independence so that we're not, for example, our priorities are not entirely shaped by wealthy funders or by any one grant. And also we see that a lot of nonprofit and grassroots staff are put in difficult positions when the grant's funding their salary run out.
When the funding ends.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we had talked about sort of the number of calls. Mm-hmm. And I think we could both agree that in a perfect world, mm-hmm. your number would be zero. Because you wouldn't need to exist. Mm-hmm. So what does success look like for you and for your other team members at Squish?
Yeah, I think, you know, we want to live in a St. Louis region where people of all genders and sexualities can live with power, safety, and dignity.
Power, safety, and dignity.
Exactly.
I'm writing that down. Keep going.
Yeah, so we're not just looking for breadcrumbs, you know, like kind of like everyone should be treated the same, kind of moving from equality to equity so that folks at different areas of privilege or marginalization are given the tools, resources, and opportunities to participate meaningfully in society. So we actually think that our peer support helpline, the ideal number is zero calls. Like we want to work ourselves out of existence.
Totally.
But we also want not just the absence of suffering, but the presence of queer joy and liberation. So what that means is, you know, maybe people wouldn't call the helpline because they're sad or upset or in trouble, but they'll be calling to celebrate because they're looking for connection, because they want to tell someone they just got married, for example. So, you know, we hope that peer support and the resources we provide are evergreen and ever relevant, because even in a thriving society, I think what we see at the core of our work is relationship building, connecting people to who they are so that they're seen and heard. So we do that through not just our peer support helpline, but also our community education and training spaces. Next year, we're hoping to launch a cohort program for specifically Black and Brown queer folks as part of our work with the Racial Justice and Healing Fund. So, you know, both want to work ourselves out of existence and also hoping that these are not just kind of crisis strategies, but kind of prevention, mental health
prevention. Prevention. Yeah, that's like my love language.
Exactly.
Now you're speaking my love language.
Yeah.
I love that you said not the absence of suffering, but the presence of joy. Mm. So do you feel like things are improving? I mean, I was sharing a story earlier today about how my 7-year-old corrected me on the use of pronouns.
Wow.
When we were at a restaurant, right? Yeah. And it is awesome. Mm. It's a totally, in some ways, it's a totally different ball game, right? And it should be. And there's still so much more work to be done. Mm. So do you feel like the environment in St. Louis and in the nation is getting safer or not yet?
That's a great question. I think what I see doing this work is that there are a lot of generational differences. And so people have
Like with substance use disorder, and I mean, there's a lot of generational differences.
Right,
yes.
In perspectives. And so the question, I think, will be answered differently based on who you're asking. So, for example, I have been told by community elders that even just 20 years ago or 30 years ago for major organizations to participate in Pride and a Pride festival or Pride parade feels like such a gift. Like, wow, they're willing to stand up and stand up for our community. And that's when Pride was really born out of the spirit of resistance.
Sure.
But now, you know, with younger generations, it can be easier to think, well, there's all of these corporations are just buying in to look good and to fulfill their DEI quota, but their actual organizational practices may not be quota.
Yeah, what are they really doing? So they might be offering, you know, rainbow colored cereal, but what are they really doing around hiring practices and recruitment and promotion and things like that?
Exactly. So I think what I've seen in this movement work is every time there's progress, there's also backlash.
Mm.
And so, you know, even as disparities in health for queer people might be less than, say, 20 years ago, there's also like a record high number of black trans women being murdered every year due to transphobic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it seems to me like generally the arc of society is bending towards more acceptance and liberation of gender and sexual diversity of all forms, but also that it seems like there are people who are pushing back on that and saying, you know, we're going too far, or that kind of making fun of the progress that's been
made. It's like one step forward, two steps back, but if we just keep plugging away at it, we'll just keep, like, forward progress, but it's slower than I think a lot of us would like.
Yeah.
If people want to call Squish to either get some guidance on how to approach a situation as an ally or an accomplice, or if they are maybe struggling with some mental health, what is the phone number?
It's 314-380-7774. So that stands for, the last four digits stands for Squish, S-Q-S-H. We also have a toll-free number that's 844-785-7774. And the last four digits are Squish as well.
Amazing. Thank you, Luca, for coming on. I really appreciate this. You have a standing invitation. Anytime you want to come on, you know where to find me. If you like this conversation, if you want more with Squish, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to The Preventable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.